Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. Please go to the website foundationathearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Dinner rain, children. Oh yes, didn't it? You know, didn't it? Oh, Mallow, didn't it rain?
Well, I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
My name is Jake Blunt. I am from Providence, Rhode Island.
Tell me about your music.
I perform traditional black folk music. Sometimes that means I'm playing bluegrass and old time stuff with a string band. Sometimes it means I'm doing a little bit of a different thing. But we're excited to be bringing both sounds to Bristol this week.
In your cultural nuances, do you go back to the roots of African-American music?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mostly I learned my music off of field recordings from the early to mid-1900s, traditional stuff like that.
Carolina Coffee.
Chocolate Drops, yeah. Yes, yeah. They're good friends of mine.
I love their music.
Me too, that's what got me into this.
Really?
Yeah. When I was first starting to learn to play this music, I spent a week with Rhiannon Giddens and Hubby Jenkins up at the Augusta Heritage Center in Elkins, West Virginia, and that was really what got me started.
And for me, the banjo that they...
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, wow, bring me home.
Yes.
How about going back the roots of African-American music, going back to Africa? Have you done that?
Yes, I have been a little bit unsure how to approach going all the way back to the continent because I don't think, you know, I'm from America. Right. I know how to do the music we have here. Yeah, I would love to collaborate with someone at some point. But on my own, I'm working on a new project now called The New Faith, or I finished it on Smithsonian Folkways Recordings as part of their African American Legacy series. It's an Afrofuturist work, so it takes all of these old songs that I've been listening to, imagines them several hundred years in the future after the changes of the climate crisis have taken place, and draws off stuff from like 1688.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So is there a dystopian element there?
I don't like to call it that. Mm. I think dystopia implies too much structure.
Okay.
We're not in a happy place.
So there's a metaphor going on. There's some teaching, some lessons learned from what you're communicating.
Exactly. And I think that's what all those old songs are really about. When I think about what speaks to me in those old songs, especially this is something I did mostly working with spirituals. Obviously, there's a great deal of religious meaning there. I'm not a super religious person, but I think that there are a lot of lessons about our cultural values and who our ancestors wanted us to grow up to be encoded into those songs. And I think taking them and putting them in even a more different context than, you know, we are now from where they were when they wrote the songs,
right.
It helps us distance ourselves enough from, I think, the overt religious text that we can more easily understand the more subtle meanings.
But the subtle underbed is the human condition.
Yes.
Right? So the religious is kind of a metaphor or a thematic way to stitch it together.
Exactly.
When you study and listen and read, going back in time, they're talking to you.
Yes.
You know, and in what ways have you heard what they're trying to tell you in literal sense?
I think it can sometimes be hard. There's a little bit of invention that has to go on when you're part of any marginalized group, whether you're a queer person or a black person or a woman who's going back and trying to hear yourself in those old things, because the people who were making the music at that time were not empowered to speak openly about their own thoughts and beliefs.
So a lot of kind of cryptic messaging.
It's all in metaphor. And that means you know, coming out of that, you know, my dad grew up on a farm in southeastern Virginia. I am close to that side of my family. Mm. You know, when we were going down to visit my grandparents, we'd drive past the neighbor's house, and my grandfather would say, "Your great, 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 great granddaddy sat under that tree when he was exercising his master's horses."
Wow.
That's how close we are to that.
Wow.
I feel close. I feel like I understand what's being said. Mm-hmm. But I think part of the reason why I feel comfortable delving into this Afrofuturist thing and doing so much imagining with my new work is because I've embraced how much imagining I have to do when I'm going back and mm-hmm. imitating that stuff. And even on the concrete level of being a performer, learning off those old recordings, I'm imitating the technology as much as I'm imitating the people. I only know what they sound like through a reel-to-reel tape recorder or, you know, a wax cylinder at the outside.
Wow. So, but in a perfect world, you're trying to go back in time, right?
Exactly. And I think one of the cool things about the new project has been being able to go forward and backward all at once mm-hmm. and feel myself as part of a continuous tradition.
How powerful.
Yeah.
And so yourself as a musician, voice, instrument, you know, how do you communicate?
I think I'm working on that. Mm-hmm. And I think as the music evolves, I find the need to change a little bit. And when I've been going out presenting the like old school string band bluegrass music, for me, it's all been about kind of saying the names of the people that I learned the songs from, because so many of those were folks who were playing alongside and in some cases even teaching the white musicians who came down to Bristol and got famous in the early days, and they never got recorded because mm-hmm. it was believed that black people playing that music couldn't be marketable. I've been wanting to give them the time that they did not have mm-hmm. while they were still here, and that's always been a focus of mine. I think with this new work, it comes more from within me than anything else I've done, and I'm still figuring out how much of myself to insert.
Back in 1927, Bristol Sessions, mm-hmm. they did Race Records.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you studied and delved in there. What did you learn from that?
One of the fun things, not fun, but interesting mm-hmm. things that I have come to understand from looking back into that history is we treat the race record, hillbilly record divide largely as this thing from the past, but we see it remade in so many ways, even in the new music that's coming out.
Really? And that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's at the root of our current genre classification system. I mean, the race and hillbilly record divide mm-hmm. set the stage for the evolution of country and bluegrass as white genres, and blues and R&B and soul as black genres. Whereas before,
so what you're implying is segregation.
Exactly. And in the moment when the race records and hillbilly records were being split, these were musicians who'd been playing alongside each other. They would have all played a little bit of each other's music. Mm-hmm. The traditions would have fed into one another all over the place. And the record industry in those early days created a financial incentive for black people to sound one way so their records would sell, and white people to sound one way so their records would sell. Mm-hmm. And even today, when we hear people like gatekeeping what country looks or sounds like, or what folk music looks or sound like, we're recreating this segregationist logic from 100 years ago. It plays out over and over again.
That's really powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Somehow in my mind, maybe I'm naive, but I think in my mind we're beyond that. But no.
Yeah, well, in some ways we are. Mm-hmm. You know, we've come to understand that it isn't right to group people based on race, and that, you know, we would never sell things as race records today.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that is in and of itself a step. But at the same time, you know, there have been many journalists who've pointed out how black artists get pigeonholed at the Grammys into very specific categories. And that's just one example. In some ways, the genres that we've inherited have the same pattern to them, even if the labels have changed.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back in time in your life. You're a kid.
Yeah.
At what point did you kind of get it, music, both voice and instrument?
Man, I consider myself somewhat of a late bloomer compared to most of my peers. I play music with a lot of people who started, you know, when they were ages 4 through 10. And I started playing the electric guitar when I was 12, but I was terrible at it. And I didn't really get good at music until I was probably 17 years old. And I picked up an acoustic guitar, and then I went off to college and had my first banjo lessons And that was the first thing I'd ever been good at.
How funny.
So I took it and ran with it, and here I am today.
How funny. Did you ever play around with violin, fiddle?
I got one as a graduation present from high school, and it took me about a year to work up the courage to go to my, you know, college music department and be like, can I just take violin lessons? And went into the violin lessons and kind of told the guy, I don't really care about classical music, but I want to play the fiddle. Can you help me not hurt myself and sound okay? And he was like, this is interesting. I'm down.
Cool.
So I got a little bit of the exercises and the mechanical approach from that, but I've never been classically trained in a real way.
Can you play by ear?
Yes, yeah. I can only play by ear. It's becoming a problem, actually.
Oh, funny. So going forward, you have a group?
Yes.
And how many? Talk to us about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, well, I tour sometimes in a few different formats, just depending on the situation. But on this run and for most of the next several months, I will have a quartet with me. A fiddler named George Jackson from Nashville, a bassist named Nelson Williams from New Orleans, and a guitarist named Gus Tritch from State College, Pennsylvania. And
you know, all acoustic.
It's guitar. Sometimes all acoustic, but as we're doing this new project, you know, this is the start of the release tour for the New Faith, so we're starting to mix in other stuff. Start to trouble the timeline in the ways that I'm trying to do in my work, where I'm playing this, like, you know, 5-string banjo with the goat skin head, and then we have Gus playing through, you know, this Vox amp, getting this real vintage guitar tone, and then I have, like, Ableton and MIDI controllers just doing all of the time periods at one time. It's all starting to melt together in a way that's really exciting for us.
It works.
Yeah, yeah. But we are doing some acoustic sets here and there. I don't think we're ever going to get tired of playing that stuff.
That's cool. And where are you touring these days?
Oh, man, we're going everywhere. We're doing kind of the Southeast, the Upper South, up to the Midwest on this run. We do the Northeast in October. We do the West Coast in November. And then in December, we're doing the Deep South.
Cool. Where in the West Coast and Deep South?
The West Coast, really the whole thing. We're going from Seattle all the way to Los Angeles, I think.
Before we started recording, we talked about San Francisco and Oakland.
Right? Oh, yeah. I'll be there. Freight and Salvage. There? Yes, it's happening.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that'll be fun. Deep South, I think we're also doing a widespread. I think we're going, you know, starting somewhere up in these parts, headed down toward Florida, and then over to New Orleans. And I think that's where we're packing it in for the year. Get to see our family for the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Take a break.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's your day job.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I feel lucky to have made it work all this time. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard, and it's getting harder these days.
It is. And part of it is the industry.
Yes.
Battling against you to make money off of Spotify or whatever.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the Spotify thing is a problem, yes. Mm-hmm. I do think that there was a problem that it answered in the form of piracy, that we now are dealing with much less because it's there. On the other hand, I think, you know, that's one, you know, we don't make revenue off of recorded music anymore. These days, because of the pandemic, a lot of the venues are on a shoestring budget and they can't pay us very much. A lot of the audience is on a shoestring budget because of inflation and they can't buy things. Everywhere we're supposed to get money from has no money right now. It's like a three steps removed problem. And, so, you know, airfares are through the roof. It's really hard to keep going right now.
So looking forward, is there any ideas, any hopes for monetizing and making the art of music viable?
I think that there is a way. For me, what that looks like is really investing in my local and regional community rather than focusing on these giant tours that cover the whole country. Maybe think about what we can do, really investing in local talent at home, whether we're talent buyers, whether we're artists who are trying to figure out who to share our platforms with or who to hire for our bands. Mm-hmm. Whether we have people near us that we can work with and that helps us financially and that we don't have to worry about plane fare, we don't have to rent cars necessarily, and it helps the environment. These problems are all connected to one another. I think that embracing our own local musical ecosystems that kept us fed for millennia before this recording industry we're all used to came into being, I think that's going to be ultimately the way forward. But you know, in the meantime, I think all the artists are just realizing we're going to have to be adaptable as far as ensemble size and length of tour and everything like that.
Well, I like your idea of regional, local. There's so many elements that are win-win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we would see a groundswell of diversity in music, both in the people sense and also the sound sense. I think that more people would feel like art was open to them as a participatory thing rather than just as a spectator.
Yeah.
I would be excited to see us reinvest in that.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing you on stage.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And only because they gave me 15 minutes with you. We're out of time.
Yeah.
But how cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm ready for a hug.
Yeah.
Okay, to learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
If you would like to go to my website, jakeblunt.com, B-L-O-U-N-T. I have all of my stuff on there, and I also have a big webpage called Black String Band Resources, where you can click through and find audio recordings, movies, books, articles, all sorts of things to read about the history of this tradition.
Jake, thank you so much.
Thanks Way for cool. having me.
My pleasure. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We'll see you here in Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia.
Generation children. Oh, yes. Didn't it? You know, didn't it? Oh, my Lord, didn't it rain? Well, it rained 40 days. It rained 40 days.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer on KCBX Radio. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Generation children. Oh, yes. Didn't it? You know, didn't it? Oh, my Lord, didn't it rain? Well, it rained 40 days. Rain 40 nights, was no land nowhere in sight. God sent the raven to spread the news, hoist his wings and away he flew. To the east, to the west, north, to the south, all day, all night. How it rained, how it rained. Oh, tell me, didn't it rain, 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 children? Rain, oh my Lord, didn't it? You know, didn't it? Whoa, oh my Lord, didn't it rain? crying, brother, can't you take a couple more? My brother said, well, your wallet looks a little thin. If you can't pay, you better learn to swim. Water rising
in the morning,
water rising
at noon,
water rising
in the evening.
Keep rising all day long, keep rising all night long. Tell me, didn't it rain, 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 children? Rain, oh my Lord, didn't it? You know, didn't it? Whoa, my Lord, didn't it rain?